Good morning. For those of you who are in the way in the back there, there are a couple of seats here and there are a couple of cushions if you don't want to be there. But if you want to be there, I can see you. There are also a couple of seats right here. Okay. So this morning I'm going to give my second talk on the Yes Set. I talked on the Yes Set a week ago, Wednesday, in our practice period. So I'll be repeating a little bit of material, but not too much. Anyway, it's all the same, isn't it? So. Okay, so I'm going to start by reading this quote from Suzuki Roshi. So the secret is to say yes and jump off from here. Then there is no problem. It means to be yourself in the present moment, always yourself, without sticking to an old self. You forget all about yourself and are refreshed. You are a new self, and before that self becomes an old self, you say yes, and you walk to the kitchen for breakfast. So the yes... The yes set, prominent in Buddhism going back pretty early. I think probably where we really find the yes set first manifesting itself is in Huayan Buddhism, based on the Avatamsaka Sutra, Huayan Buddhism. That's in the 7th century, before there's any really writing on Zen. And here's Fa Tsang in the 7th century. And some of you will be very familiar with this already. Because a dust mote is identical with or is an expression of ultimate reality, it can therefore contain all things. Since all the universe contained within a dust mote are also expression of reality, they too contain all other universes. This observation goes on indefinitely, and thus realms embracing realms ad infinitum are established. An illustration of this truth can be seen by either the demonstration of the inner reflection of mirrors, and Fa Tsang is famous for having courted the Empress Wu to become a Buddhist practitioner. And one of the ways he courted her was he set up a hall of mirrors. Some of you have read this. He set up a hall of mirrors. And he had a Buddha statue and a candle in each mirror. And each of the mirrors reflected the other mirror. Other mirrors included all within them. And he brought her into the room and he said, "This is what I've been trying to talk to you about for the last 5 years." An illustration of this truth can be seen by either the demonstration of the inner reflection of mirrors or by the metaphor of the marbles of Indra's net. The innumerable images reflected within a crystal marble is comparable to the infinite universes contained within a dust mote. This, however, is only the first realm. Within each marble and its reflection are seen, in all the other marbles, and vice versa, the realms embracing realms ad infinitum then come into view. So the yes set. And so the yes set is forming here in Chinese Buddhism at a time that Buddhism is trying to take hold in China, having left a culture that was very spiritually oriented, that was very oriented toward leaving the world, as sannyasins did in the last part of their lives, to a culture that's very family-oriented, a culture that believes in work and contribution to society, a culture that believes in the importance of the details of every life, of daily life. So the dust mote then, going to the kitchen, having breakfast, washing your face, all these things are just what they are, and yet they include everything. And there's a saying yes to that, because when you see it and you do it, you experience it, and you say yes. You can't help it. So, story I've told many times is with my teacher Suzuki Roshi, whom I read the quote from 3 or 4 minutes ago. So, in San Francisco, where I'm from, I'm kind of from San Francisco, not exactly, but kind of. There were movie theaters in North Beach that I used to like to go to, where I could see really high quality movies, aesthetically pleasing, not junky, not Hollywood movies. All right, and then there was the movies that happened right in our zendo, which was a synagogue which had been converted into a Japanese Zen temple. And those happened every Saturday night. And there were huge billboards for them. They were Japanese blood and guts movies. They were Japanese grade B. It looked to me like probably grade D movies. All I saw was, when I was, they were lurid, the posters were lurid. That was enough for me, just to see one of those lurid posters. I'd come out of Zazen, because we sat there, and see these lurid posters. So one morning I said to Suzuki Roshi, my teacher, every Saturday night he went. And he went with the Japanese, because the Japanese people didn't sit with us, but they went to the movies together. I don't know. Something like that. So I said to him, that must be kind of unpleasant for you to have to sit through those movies every Saturday night. And he said to me, I like them all. And I'm still puzzling over that 40-some years later. I'm still puzzling over that. But I consider it to be a manifestation of the yes set. A manifestation of just seeing this and no gap. Immediate. Appreciating it for what it is. Because it's alive. Even if it's a Class D movie. But still, so I thought that at the time, but I still wondered about his taste. But see, here I am being critical, right? Critical mind is coming up immediately, and that's not the yes set. The yes set sees the critical mind, but it doesn't indulge it. It just sees it. And as I was saying, in practice period, sometimes we almost have nothing we can say yes to. But there's always something, and we can always say yes to our breath, our breathing, can't we? Because we breathe. We breathe. And in fact, the fact that we do breathe means that there's a saying yes. Suzuki Roshi says, on your out-breath, be calm and die. Saying yes to just letting go of all the residue that you don't need. How much of that residue do you really need? All the pollutants that you don't need. Just be calm and die. And then he says, then that's like being in your mother's bosom. And then on the in-breath, enjoyment comes up. And we are free, says my long-deceased teacher. It's true. So, a month or two ago, I read about an example of the yes set that came from someone who didn't know Buddhism, and didn't know even the work of Milton Erickson. Milton Erickson's a psychiatrist who used the yes set. He didn't know about Buddhism either, but he observed people. He observed that if you could get a person to say yes to one thing or just nod their heads, that it was could be the beginning of a transition for them. It could be the beginning of a change in their mindset, of an opening, of a becoming more malleable. So he, with his clients, would figure out how to do it whenever he could. And I told a long story about that last time, which I won't tell today. So anyway, this person whom I read about, had not been exposed to that, had not been exposed to Buddhism, but here's what she says. She said, well, on holidays, I hated to go to holidays at my uncle's house, because at my uncle's house, my uncle would always say, just before we had our meal, to the little children in the family, now pray to Jesus to forgive you for your sins, so we can eat. Sound familiar, anybody? I hope it doesn't. And this was hard for her to sit through this, really hard. And she found that her larynx, her voice box, was getting all clogged up. And afterwards, she experienced, every time she did a holiday with her uncle, she experienced this clogged up, stuffed up larynx. It's almost like she was, although she didn't say it, she was so angry and that she just stuffed it into her larynx, right? So, anyway, she tells that story. Then she talks about the fact that she's a therapist, too, and she works with clients, and a client asks her once, what's your spiritual path? And she said, yes. My client waited thoughtfully. I repeated myself, yes. My client waited still. Yes, I explained, is my spiritual path. My realization was based upon a verse from the Christian scriptures. Agree quickly with thine adversary. Agree quickly with thine adversary. Matthew 5:25. And then she says, a broad meaning for adversary is anything which I am against. I was against my uncle's use of Jesus' teachings. Then she said, I decided I would treat this as if I were a reporter. As a reporter, I told myself every time what was happening, what I was experiencing, and saying yes. That was a subtext. I was just noticing. So she said, I took this on as a school writing assignment. Yes, this is happening. I'm experiencing this. Yes, this is happening. I'm experiencing this. Whatever the feeling, whatever the thought, whatever the emotion was. Yes, I have an opinion about this, which I may or may not say. Yes, yes. So this became her practice. And that's Zen practice. That's a great Zen practice, really, isn't it? And she didn't even know she was doing Zen practice, which is better. It's better, because as soon as you know, you're trying to get it right. And when you try to get it right, you forget to say yes. You get all twisted up and forget to say yes. Because yes is primal. And then she says, most of us know what we are against, but what are you for? What are we for? Having said that, it's important to remember that a key part of the individuation process for us as human beings is saying no. My grandson just turned 4, luckily, because in his 3s, mostly he said no. Mostly he said no during his 3s. Now, it's different for different kids, but you know, mostly no. You want me to read you, you want me to read you this book, Ethan? No. I thought you liked this book. No. Doesn't mean he doesn't want me to read him a book. It means that he's developing his own little identity. He's developing his own little self. And so he says no. It's a way of doing that. And what's the other? 3 and then what? Adolescence. Right? 3 and adolescence. So when I was a young adolescent, maybe an old adolescent, I don't know. When I was a young adolescent, my dad would have me do work around the house. Not really hard work, but do work around the house and around the yard. And he said to me once, you know, the way you just shake your head when I ask you to do work, the way you frown and look down, he said, you don't refuse to do it, but you know, you're saying no. You're always, and this is hard. I wish you would say, gladly, Father. So then you know what I started doing as a smart-ass 12-year-old or something, every time he'd ask me to do something, I'd say, gladly, Father. And my dad had enough sense of humor that he got it, although I know he wished he'd never asked me to say that. But again, adolescent, establishing separation from parent, separation from milieu. I'm my own self. I need to individuate. So we can't leave that part out, right? And there are, according to Suzuki Roshi, two types of situations when we're likely to use our spirit of yes. One is the familiar. When something becomes familiar, we're more likely to lose our yes spirit. Like my wife has been gone for 2 weeks and she's coming home today. And I'm full of yes. But how long is that going to last? That's what we are. That's why we have to do zazen, you guys. Over and over for eternity. Because we get habituated in the familiar and then we forget the joy of a natural, immediate yes to whatever there is. The second reason Suzuki Roshi says we do that is because we're focused on a future time. My future time when I want to give a talk on my first talk on Zen when I really, really still. I don't want to have to give a talk today because I'm later on. Later on, I'll say yes to cleaning the Zendo when it's really dirty or when I have time. I've got too many things to do. So that's the his second type of situation. And then Suzuki Roshi also intimates, though he doesn't talk about this, that there's the mature stage of saying yes. we all like that one, don't we? Mature stage of saying yes is, he says, I put emphasis on difficult, hard practice because I want to make you stronger. So when we have a difficulty, and we can just say yes to it, just say yes, without any comment, without any analysis, which is not easy for any of us. And this year, I've talked this year about hurting my back in July and having to be prone. I only live 4 blocks from here. I had to be prone during Zazen for about 2 weeks. So I was in my bed while Zazen was going on here. Now, for most of you guys, that's no big deal. Maybe not a big deal, I'm sorry. But that's my identity to be here. That's my identity. I identify with being here and sitting straight and breathing as a Zen teacher. But before that, for many years, as a Zen student. It's my identity. So where did my identity go? Who am I? What am I? I'm just sitting there, lying there, not even sitting, on my back. So I had the opportunity to begin saying yes to doing Zazen on my back in my bedroom with some pain. Not a whole bunch of pain as long as I didn't move. Right? I had the opportunity. We always have the opportunity to say yes to the mote of dust. To the mote of dust. But, and I talked about this last time too, all the good things about saying yes, but the caveat is, in regard to saying yes, the title of this book, Not Always So. Here's the caveat, right? Not Always So. Because believing too much in the yes set, well, that's fine, but it can be a little dangerous or a little unhealthy. And the yes set can be used in a pretty negative way. In a pretty negative, self-destructive or destructive to others way. Just like anything can. Anything can, right? So, what about some charismatic politician? Some charismatic politician who says, are you tired of higher taxes? Yes. Have you had enough of crime and violence in the country? Yes. Is everyone tired of spending their hard-earned dollars for less and less every week? Yes. Will you vote for me? Yes. Will you contribute $1,000 to my campaign? Yes. How about religion? How about spirituality? Do ministers and priests do that sometimes too? Oh, my good students, all you good Zen students, please take refuge in Buddha. Yes. Oh, you good Zen students. I have to say good because, you know, it's part of part of this whole thing, right? If I say bad, it doesn't work. Oh, you good Zen students, please take refuge in Dharma. Yes. Yes. Oh, you good Zen student, please take refuge in Sangha. Yes. See? Do that again, all the way down. All right, all right. If you guys didn't see that, he'll come out and show you afterwards. That's the true Zen way. Oh, you good Zen students, ours is the one true way. Yes. Oh, you good Zen students, give all your money to fix this poor, dilapidated building, and the Buddha nature will shine in your life. Yes. So, not always so. Yes, but not always so. But not always so. Yes and no are not two in Buddhism. Front of the paper and the back of the paper are not two. Two of it different expressions of one reality. One reality. And one subcategory of the yes set is, I've talked about this before, neti neti. In Sanskrit it means not this, not this. Advaita Vedanta, not this, not this. The Heart Sutra, no sound, no sight, no taste, no touch, no body, no mind, no this, no that, no the other. So what's the deal there? What's the deal there? In a way, if you look at Huayan Buddhism, it comes right after the Heart Sutra and Nagarjuna Buddhism, which is all knows. The negation of the negation of the negation. And then 300 years later, the affirmation of the affirmation of the affirmation. Interesting, huh? So I consider that a subcategory of the yes set. A subcategory. So a friend of mine who's also a Zen teacher and lives in another state had problems with her back this last fall. And she, like me, I mean, why this was so hard for me is that I've been sitting half lotus for 40 years. And I couldn't even get up. And now I can't sit half lotus. Still, almost, let's see, July, 9 months later, I still can't sit. I have to sit like this, and I still have a little numbness in my foot. So... But I could sit up, and even if I can't sit up, I can lie down, and even if I can't lie down well, I can breathe. There's always something. So my friend had trouble with her back out on the West Coast. She had trouble with her back, and she said, "Then I began practicing neti neti. I began saying to myself." Who am I? Who am I, this person who is supposedly a Zen teacher who is lying prone while her students are all sitting perfectly in the Zendo in agony? Who am I? Am I this agony? No. Am I the thoughts and worries and current concerns about this agony? No. Am I the sensations that come up as I wish I were there with them? No. Am I the memories of who I used to be before I had this problem? No. This is the who am I practice. And there's no answer to this who am I practice. This neti neti practice is that you aren't any of these things. You're not any of these. You would be attached to them. We attach to them. I attach to my old identity. Oh, no, I... Getting used to a new identity, but it's going to. As soon as I get used to it, it's going to change, right? That's the teaching of this wonderful teaching. You may consider it awful, but it's wonderful teaching. So, I wrote her back. I emailed her back. And I said, after she'd been doing this for a while, I said, how's it going? And she said, well, I do it every day. I do it for my full hour every day. And she said, and you know what? My mind is focusing, and I'm slowing way down. And I thought, duh. I mean, you know, here she's been practicing Zazen for 40 years. Did she think that lying down is any different? But we do. We think it's different. Not, maybe not as good or not as something or other. And then she emailed me back and she said, boy, when I do this, there's wonderful joy and energy coming up, especially when I don't analyze it, especially when I'm really vigilant. Well, she's a Zen teacher. She's telling me this as if this were some newfound awareness. But it is. It's always newfound. You've never got it. You've never got it. It's always a newfound awareness. You may think, oh, I should. I've been practicing so and so long. I should have it by now. You should have what? What should you have? And who is the you? Is it the projection into the future about what you want? Is that the you? Is it the memory of what you thought you would be like now? Is that the you? And of course there's no answer. And the secret is that it doesn't matter who you are. But that's all extra stuff. Extra stuff. Extra baggage. It creates density. It creates inertia. And it creates forgetfulness about the possibility of just saying yes to everything. To everything. But not to everything abstractly, to this very everything that's in front of you, that you're facing, this dust mote. So then, Suzuki Roshi says, there is no problem. It means to be yourself in the present moment, always yourself, without sticking to an old self. You forget all about yourself and are refreshed. You are a new self, and before that self becomes an old self, you say yes, and you go to see the awful movies with your friends and have a good time. That's what I want to say this morning. Comments? Questions? Yeah.
I appreciate your teaching. Thank you.
You're welcome.
I naturally, for me, the first thing I thought of when you said yes said, of course, is no said, and that koan, does a dog have
no yes,
the
yes.
The famous answer is mu, which
yes.
Can be translated no, negative, false.
Yes, that's right.
And,
that's right.
So that came up.
Uh-huh.
And I appreciate your non-dualistic yes and no kind of containing full experience. And I just thought of the Jewish tradition too, that if like that dust mote that contains infinity, that if you save one person, you save the whole world.
Mm-hmm.
And that you know, we're given responsibility for our little patch of territory. And that if that's your responsibility, no one can do that for you, but you do have to do that, and that's kind of your calling.
That's right. Yeah, that's
so
good.
And, you know, as far as great D movies go, maybe they're great dog movies, or something, and art movies can be boring. They can be something. I would defend the Hollywood movies.
Oh, okay. All right. But then I want to take you to an art movie. I'm going to go to the Hollywood movie and say yes to that, and you'll go to the art movie and say yes to that. Good. Thank you. Thank you. Yes. In the history of Buddhism, there is an assertion of a teaching and then a reaction to it. And then an assertion and then a reaction. So we can say that the Zen that you're talking about is somewhat of a reaction against YN. But it's also not a reaction, because out of all of those no's come big yes. Just like out of all these netties, not this, not this, not this, comes a feeling of just not separation within the individual, no dividedness. Anybody else?
Can I tell a story?
Sure, tell a story, Ben. Better tell it loud, though. There's a group in the other room.
Okay, so we were sewing our robe from Kamoi-san at her house, and we usually sew very quietly, and it was very lovely. And very rarely, during the process, we asked for any teaching outside of how to sew a robe, although there's much teaching contained there. But one day, near the end, someone in our group said, sometimes I worry that I'm not good enough. Sometimes I worry that I'm not good enough to be a Zen priest. And she said, yes, forever.
Yesterday I had the privilege of seeing Suzanne Farrell Ballet, where they were presenting some duets by George Balanchine. And one of them is based on an opera called, I'm going to mess up the Italian pronunciation, The Sleepwalker. I won't even But in this particular duet, a woman comes on stage. There's a man there already. And a woman comes on stage, and she's floating like some kind of seed from a dandelion. I mean, it's just incredible the way she was able to move across the stage. And she's a sleepwalker. And the man is a poet, and he falls in love with her. He's completely entranced. And he tries to interact with her, and she just seems to just drift past him. He discovers that he can kind of direct her movements a little bit. He'll kind of hold on to the candle that she's got a hold of, and she'll start spinning around like this, and then she'll come to rest. And he can move her around a little bit. When he tries to put out a leg to trip her, she just gracefully steps over it, never acknowledging, not aware of the fact that he's even there. And then this goes on for some moments, and he realizes that he's never going to be able to make contact with this woman. So he kisses her tenderly, and just pushes her gently, and she floats off the stage. But that's saying yes.
Good. Thank you. Anybody else? Thank you.